I'm Tyler Curtis Southard, and this is the Weekly Podcast. Maine is well known for its natural beauty and wildlife opportunities, attracting many from around the state, region, and beyond to spend time in the Maine outdoors. For this week's episode, we talk with Judy Camuso, Commissioner of the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife for the state of Maine. Commissioner Camuso is the first woman to lead the department overseeing the preservation, protection, and enhancement of inland fisheries and wildlife resources around the state. Well, thank you for joining us here today, Commissioner Camuso, and very happy to see you. We're conducting this over Zoom, so for people listening at home, it may sound a little different than our in-studio recordings. But to start off our conversation today, to get our listeners to better know who you are, can you give us some background on yourself all the way back to your childhood years? Talk about where you grew up, what was your life like, what did you enjoy doing, what some of your interests at that early age?
Sure, yeah, and thank you. Thanks so much for having me and inviting me here today. I'm really pleased to be joining you all. And my background is probably not that interesting. I grew up outside of Boston, 11 miles outside of Boston. I grew up in a time when, you just weren't inside. I was just outside all the time. Unless it was really raining heavily, we were outside all the time. So I grew up, playing in, kickball and all kinds of other games and running, through the woods and making tree houses and really spending as much time as I could outside. And, my family was fortunate enough that we spent summers on the coast in Massachusetts, and likewise, we spent all of our time sort of playing and going to the beach. And I spent a lot of time catching crabs and horseshoe crabs and all that kind of stuff. So I've had a passion for the outdoors from the time I was, a little tiny kid.
And you had a few siblings as well. Did they go out and kind of do adventures with you?
They will. Yeah. They're definitely a little bit more kind of the skiing, golfing, outdoor type. They think some of what I do is a little unusual, but they're definitely interested in lots of outdoor activities for sure. Yeah. I'm the youngest of six. So I have, I came from a big family, and, I've got 16 nieces and nephews and several great nieces and nephews now. So it's a pretty big outing. Anytime my family gets together as a whole group, it's pretty loud.
And you stayed within New England when you decided to go off to higher education, off to college. Can you talk about where you went to school and what you decided to study?
Sure. Yeah. So coming from Boston, I didn't really have a lot of, mentors in the field of wildlife. It was kind of an unknown career for me as a young student, or kind of looking forward to what I wanted to do. So I went to the University of Vermont initially to study animal medicine with the idea, of course, that I would become a veterinarian. And really, what's always fascinated me about animals in general is behavior. And so I just wasn't, enthralled with the medicine aspect of it. And I had a friend taking a wildlife class, and so I just audited the class with her, and I just really, I loved the it was a beginning sort of entry level wildlife ecology class, and I just loved the class. And that summer I did an internship down at Monomoy National Wildlife Refuge, and there was just no going back from there. We spent my summer on a couple offshore islands off the coast of Chatham, counting birds and doing all kinds of nest surveys and inventories and monitoring migration and working on building trails. And, I just really sort of made that connection that has stayed with me forever.
So you kind of found your path up in Vermont. And after you graduated, can you talk about where your career path led after that and some of the jobs you've been through that led you up to the office you have today?
Yeah. So I had several, I think most wildlife biologists spend quite a bit of time working in seasonal positions, doing variety of different, working with a variety of different animals or suite of animals. And I worked at a number of different wildlife refuges and national estuarine research reserves. I still did a few work at some veterinary clinics just to make sure I didn't want to pursue my veterinary degree. And after a few years of that, I was fortunate enough to get a position with Maine Audubon. And I stayed at Maine Audubon for 11 years and sort of worked my way up from a staff naturalist to when I left there, I was the environmental center director at their headquarters facility in Falmouth. And I really loved my job at Audubon, but I just felt like I wasn't learning as much anymore. And I was looking for some opportunities to grow professionally, and the position with the state opened up in Gray. So I thought, oh, I'll throw my hat in the ring for that. And I happily got that job. And, I wasn't really even a consideration. I just knew I wanted the job. So I moved, left my job at Audubon and moved over to Fish and Wildlife. And I worked in the region for about 7 years, which wasn't quite as long as I wanted. I would have liked a couple more years, but a position opened up in Augusta, the special projects position. And I'd always had my eye on that position as a next step. And the woman who was in this position retired. And so, and some of these positions they only become available once in your career. So I was like, well, it's a couple of years earlier than I want, but there's no, you got to apply for it. So I applied for that position and got it. And so I moved to Augusta, my position moved to Augusta. And then within 6 months of being in that position, our bureau director retired. And then so I was, as that kind of process, that sort of domino effect happens when people retire, I became wildlife director. So I served as wildlife director since about 2013 for the agency. And then I've always wanted to be commissioner. I've always known I wanted to be commissioner. Even when I worked at Audubon and I didn't really even know what the commissioner did, I just knew that this would be like what I thought would be the ultimate job. And so when Governor Mills was elected, I was like, well, this could be an opportunity for me here. And so I applied for my current position and was fortunate enough to be selected and then confirmed, nominated by the governor and confirmed by the legislature.
And you've been nominated as and now holding office as the first female commissioner. How does that feel?
Great. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. For me, working as the first female commissioner for the first female governor is pretty amazing. And, I grew up, my dad died when I was young, and my mom always taught me you could do whatever you wanted. There's no barriers. And, that isn't always quite the case. And so I'm really happy to be in a role, in a position, and I try to be visible and so that people can see like, oh yes, I could do that. Of course, if she can do it, I can do it. That's why I actually applied for the special projects position, was because there was a woman in the position and I thought, I know Sandy. I like Sandy. If she can do that job, I can probably do that job. I didn't really even know what she did, but I knew that, I thought it seemed like a good job. And so, I think it's really important to have role models and mentors and people to look up to that you can sort of aspire, that if they can do it, so can I. So it's really, it makes me really happy that I have that opportunity.
That's fantastic. And what is your role now as commissioner of the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife?
So obviously, my kind of big picture role is I'm the head of the agency. So I run the agency and everything that we do. But, I think a little bit more broadly than that, my personal mission and why I do what I do is I want to instill a passion for wildlife and the outdoors and as many people as I can. And I believe that people will protect what they love. And so the more people that we have engaged and connected with fisheries and wildlife, the more support and long-term success we will have, with all of our wildlife populations. So I see my goal as really trying to connect more people with the outdoors and with the agency at the same time, making sure that we do a good job managing fish and wildlife populations to a healthy, sustainable, socially acceptable level, make sure that people are safe while they're outside, that they're having a good positive experience, and make sure that they want to come back and do it again. So I think that's really kind of my role. Obviously, I try and set a vision, and I have my own kind of personal agenda of things that I want to accomplish as commissioner, that might be a little different from other people. But I think broadly, my goal is to really try and connect as many people as we can with Maine's tremendous outdoor opportunities, and make sure that we're protecting our fisheries and wildlife resources while we do it.
And I'm curious, because you went into this line of work because of your love for the outdoors, but for your day-to-day, do you get to spend a lot of time outdoors, or are you kind of stuck in an office in front of a computer or a calendar? What is your typical day look like for you now?
I spend most of the time in my office in Augusta. I'm really good about getting out on the weekends, because I know that's how I kind of reinvigorate and recharge myself. But yeah, most of the time in Augusta, during the work week, I'm generally in the office. People often comment, like at my social media posts, they're like, "Oh, you get out so often. That's so great." I'm like, I mean, you know, that's the weekend. I'm not at work when I'm doing those things. But yeah, it's most of the time, during the legislative session, like, you spend a good deal of time. I spend a good deal of time at the State House, and I do a lot of public appearances. So, when that's allowable, I'm out in the public, and lately I've been doing more of those, just their outdoor events still. So that's a little bit, feel safer. But, prior to the pandemic, I did a lot of speaking engagements and public appearances, but I spend most of my time in Augusta. Yeah.
And it helps that a lot of Maine, I mean, you could be in the city like in Augusta, but drive a couple of miles and you have a nice outdoor experience.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
And what would you say have been some of your biggest challenges or some of your biggest highlights over your career so far?
Well, certainly the pandemic is not something that anybody could have planned for, and it has been, a significant challenge for the state, for the people, of not just the state, but the world, and has had, very devastating impacts on many people. I think one thing that the pandemic has taught us is that people really do take solace in the outdoors. And when times were tough, people just flooded the outdoors. Everybody went outside. The outdoors stayed open and relatively normal. It was, birds were still migrating in the same time in the same places, and the frogs were still calling. And you could go outside and be like, okay, it's okay. Everything's okay. Things out here are still okay. I can't go to the office, and I can't go see my friends, and but I can still be outside. And it was really helpful and healing, I think, for many, many people. And we saw huge numbers of people participate in activities that they have not participated in before. And then some people who had done a little bit, maybe a little hiking and a little bit of fishing, have expanded their outdoor experiences. So we worked really hard during the pandemic to try and break down as many barriers as we could to provide opportunity for people, to make sure people knew places they could go close to where they live, so they didn't have to travel very far. And, we had lots of things like, bald eagles distance away, 6 feet and all that kind of stuff, to try and help people get outside safely during the pandemic. So that certainly has been a challenge. I think one of the highlights is really, though, seeing how many people are outside. And one of my primary goals as commissioner was to, increase the number of people participating in the activities that the department manages. And you know, we have a whole program on trying to recruit, retain, and reactivate people in outdoor activities. And I mean, I couldn't probably, if I could be commissioner for 12 years, I couldn't probably have predicted that we would get to this level as we have as a result of the pandemic. So it's been a tremendous challenge, but it's had, and I'm hopeful that it will have a lasting positive impact on people's connection with nature and the outdoors.
And speaking of the pandemic, have you noticed that it's been mainly Mainers that have been going out more and more numbers, or are you seeing a lot of other people from out of state too coming up to Maine to enjoy our natural beauty here?
So a little of both, and we've done some surveying. So when we have we've done some like free fishing weekends and opportunities like that, and so then we survey people who are participating. So we have some folks who have done things in the past but hadn't done them recently. Those are Mainers who had been what we would call like inactive but had been previous experiences, so that those people kind of re-engaged. Then we have people who really had not been outside much at all, started going outside just in their backyard, and then kind of graduated to the neighborhood park or, you know, wildlife management area in close proximity to the local trailhead, land trust property, that sort of thing. But we've also seen an increase in the number of people, particularly this past year, from out of state coming to Maine. And I think partly because Maine's numbers were so good during the pandemic and really were one of the safest states in the country to be in, people viewed us as a safe place to come. Once the, you know, travel restrictions were lifted, we definitely have seen more people from out of state participating as well. So it's been a little bit of both, I think.
And not too long ago, one issue that created a lot of debate across the state was the bear baiting issue. Can you talk about that experience and kind of what that was all about and what was learned in that process?
Yeah, so that that was a referendum brought forward to try and change or limit the number, the ways that the state manages our bear population. So we allow people to use bait to hunt over bait or with dogs or using a trap. And so the referendum question that was 2014 was to try and eliminate those options. And, you know, one of the things that we learned was that, one, we need to do a better job communicating with the public because people really don't understand the tools or how they're used in the state. And unless you spend a lot of time in northern Maine, where the majority of the bear population is, it's really hard to understand how essential those tools are for bear management here in Maine. We have, I think, either the most or the second most forested state in the country. 94% of the state, I think, is forested, and it's dense forest. And so being able to harvest a bear ethically with a clean shot really requires those tools. We're not like many of the other states that have kind of big, wide open expanses. And so you have long lines of sight. So I think the department, you know, that referendum failed. But I think one of the lessons that we really learned was what the public doesn't understand what the state agency was, you know, how we were managing wildlife or why and how they benefit from it. So as a result of that, we established communications plan to help people beyond just people that hunt or fish, to help the citizens of, we are a state agency, we work for all the citizens of the state, to help everybody understand what we do and why they do it, why we do it, and what, you know, a little bit beyond kind of the frenzy of a referendum. So to just have, you know, real conversations, educate people on these are what the populations are like and for all kinds of species, certainly not just bear, but hopefully folks have noticed in the past 5 years a significant increase in the communication from the department. And particularly in the past 2-3 years since I've been commissioner, we kind of revamped our communications information and education department to really focus on communicating with a broad audience, helping people understand, helping people get outside, helping people engage, safely with the activities that we manage. So for me, that was really the important message.
And can you talk about some of the initiatives that you've been a part of here in Maine throughout your different roles?
Sure. You know, there are a number of initiatives. I think, you know, for me, what was top of mind, I guess, is there are still a lot of our participants are men, and that's wonderful. I would just like to see more women participating in the activities that we manage. So I serve on Women and Wildlife Committee in the region, as well as on a national group, try and help encourage more women to participate in these activities. And one of the simple things, like, it's amazing how we met as a group, and we met with a bunch of women, not professionals, but just who recreate, and asked, like, what are the barriers? What are your biggest obstacles? And one of them, people were like, there's no, women aren't photographed doing these things. So unless you can see yourself, somebody that looks like you doing them, you don't think, oh, that's for me. And so just simple things like that, where we started actually photographing women doing these activities. We started featuring some of our female biological staff and warden service staff in a lot of our podcasts, and just try and broaden the scope of people. Everybody's welcome in this agency. This isn't a anti-anybody campaign, but trying to broaden the group and have a more diverse workforce and customer base, I think has been certainly one of my initiatives. I think one of the other initiatives has been really trying to talk to a much broader audience. And so the department has historically done a pretty good job of talking to the people who buy a license from us, any kind of license. Once we have your contact information, we do a pretty good job of talking to you either email or over social media. But for folks that don't interact with the department, we actually worked with a marketing firm to help us kind of do some digital marketing so that we could reach out to people. So if you were Googling hiking in Maine, you know, boots in Maine or anything outdoor with those kind of key phrases, then we started doing some digital marketing to help promote so that you would then next time see an ad from the department to make some connections. One of my big goals has been to really, you know, talk to a broader audience.
I just want quick question on that. Do you think some of that has a stem too from just gender stereotypes from a young age, you know, boys being forced more to like outdoor stuff and girls maybe not so much? Is that something that's kind of occurred over longer periods of time?
Oh, for sure. I think some of that is there's some, you know, dads forever have taken their sons out hunting. You know, that's just kind of the way it is. But there's lots of women who have do these activities. And I think most of the data shows that more and more women are interested and engaged in these activities, particularly around providing food for their families and providing healthy, organic, free range food for their families. And so I think, you know, there's probably a million reasons why typically, you know, the agencies and the participations are about 80-20, 80% men and 20% female. And so a lot of states have been working, you know, pretty actively trying to broaden diversify their workforce and their customer base. It's like just a good business model to have a more diverse customer base. Yeah. And I think we're making good progress in that front. I mean, there's still work to do. You know, it's still hard. You know, it's not that easy to get even like clothes for women. The outdoor hunting gear for women is very limited. And, you know, for my whole career as a biologist, I wore men's clothes, and that's like, it's annoying. I don't want to wear men's pants. Like, you know, but we can't get the women's pants. We can't buy them.
And when you do find pants, they don't have pockets, right? So,
you know, so there's like frustrating things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're working on them and trying to make progress on those things. And sometimes it feels, you know, like it's slow, but as long as it's steady and keep applying regular steady pressure, then I'm hopeful that we'll get there. There's a lot more women. There's a lot more women participating now. And I think, I'm not sure what the cause is, but a lot, I think women are just sort of like, these are cool activities. I'm in,
Are there other initiatives too that stick out to you that you've been a part of?
I'm trying to think sort of, I serve on a lot of boards, and I think the big issues right now are certainly, and we'll talk about that later, is climate, trying to come up with ways to address climate. The other one, which I talked about a little bit already, is really trying to, so for a lot of years, participation rates were declining in many of these activities, not just in hunting, but just outdoor activities in general. People were like coming indoor, spending 7, 10, 12 hours a day, either like on a television, on their tablet, on their iPhone, whatever. And so, disconnected, like there's a whole nature deficit disorder, and there's all kinds of studies that show the detrimental effects of not connecting with the outdoors, just spending so much time on your phone or your computer. And so this has certainly been one of my initiatives to try and promote the outdoors, to get more people participating. And we have a whole program long before the pandemic to try and work on those issues and talk about the health benefits and the mental health and the physical health. And so that always has been and will always be kind of my driving force of why I do my job. But there's a lot of other initiatives like the 3 billion bird loss that I've participated in and try to help people understand what that kind of loss of a whole, segment of fauna is, what that means for us, and how we can try and minimize or reverse that trend. So there's lots of initiatives like that, but those are kind of more, a little more amorphous and kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, I've noticed over the past, decade or so, it seemed like there's been more attempts to kind of maybe tie in technology with the outdoors, different like geocaching apps, or right, people can be their own, like, go birding and track, migrations, or track different plant and fauna they find on the wild. So is that something that you guys kind of look into as well? Some of those tools?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely, there's no future without technology, right? So there's no future without your iPhones or your smartphones. So that is all going to be always part of what we do. And, there's, we have a citizen science program right now, our breeding bird atlas and our wintering bird atlas, and that's all through eBird. It's all electronic. So you go out and you do your survey and you go back and enter your data through a web portal. And so there's all kinds of, there's amazing apps out there, like that Picture Me app that you just take a picture and it tells you what the plant is. Like, those are phenomenal technologies. We're going to embrace those and continue to use those and help. They're tools to help get more people outside, and they break down barriers. I guess one of the other things we did, which isn't really an initiative, but during the pandemic, we migrated our Hunter Ed class to a fully online class. So in the past, you could take it in person or you could do a hybrid approach. And we have been talking for years, and we've been moving gradually toward offering a fully online course. And along with many other states during the pandemic, when you couldn't have in-person classes, we did make that shift. We still offer the in-person classes for people that want them, and we still offer the hybrid classes for people that want them as well. But one of the things we found was we had, in 1 year's time, we had more than twice as many people take the Hunter Ed class that had taken it in the past, and 37% of those were women. And much of the, we get feedback from, comments from the class, and consistent feedback on, this is fantastic. As a young mom, a single mom, couldn't, the in-person class just didn't work for me. So really, one of my other, I'm not sure if it's an initiative, but trying to break down those barriers so that people can participate. Like, what's the holdup? Is it, you can't take the class, you don't have the gear, you don't know where to go. We can help with lots of those things. So let's figure out what the problems are and try and break down the barriers so people, are more comfortable participating or have the ability to participate.
And speaking of education, do you work in conjunction with schools and teachers across the state to help provide learning materials or maybe some lesson plans for them to use with their kids?
We do. We have information and education department, and they work. We have one educator that works in particular with schools and with school groups. So she does lots of classes with teachers, so kind of teaching the teachers. And so then they have the tools to take. We have curriculums developed that they then take into their schools and teach their kids. And then we do lots of programs with kids directly with classes, like at our wildlife park in Gray, at the main wildlife park. We did a lot of virtual classes over during the pandemic to try and help people who were not able to go into, we couldn't have people at the wildlife park or that sort of thing. So we did a ton of virtual programs, and not just for kids, but we had all kinds of virtual programs on how to call a turkey, how to, how to harvest it, like how to process your deer, all kinds of things. So try to get people, like, everybody wants to do these things, but we can't get together as a group to learn how to do them. So we made videos and podcasts and blogs and all kinds of stuff to help people, to give people these tools. We call them next step programs to help people kind of learn how to do various aspects of outdoor activities.
And you already talked about the pandemic, and you briefly mentioned climate challenges, but what are some of the other obstacles you're facing currently as commissioner, and what do you foresee for the near future for the state of Maine?
Well, certainly climate change is the biggest challenge that we face as wildlife managers, and it's the biggest, the biggest challenge that that we'll deal with as wildlife professionals or fisheries and wildlife professionals. It's so big, it feels a little bit insurmountable, but the governor has done a phenomenal job with her Maine Won't Wait climate action plan, and already dedicated or proposed, and with the legislature support, dedicated $40 million to the Lands for Maine Future Program to get a 30%, a goal of 30% by 2030 for, land acquisition in the state. So there's a lot of positive movement. The challenge with climate is that for some folks, I guess one thing about the pandemic is, right, we learned people will change their behavior. If they think it's important and that there's a benefit, they'll change their behavior. And so I'm positive, that's a positive thing, that there are ways that we can look to the future, and as climate issues, I'm optimistic that people can change their behavior and start doing some things to minimize our impacts or our long-term kind of climate footprint, if you will. As wildlife managers, these aren't things like, it's when people talk about climate change, I think there's this sort of storms in California or down south, and it's far away and projecting out in 2050 and this one. It's not, you can't see it. But here in Maine, we have issues with our wildlife right now today that we can see. So it is immediate, and it is an immediate issue that we are working to address. So climate change is definitely one of the biggest challenges that we will face and will continue to face.
What are some of these issues that you're currently seeing here in Maine?
I think our moose population is the simplest example to explain. So we have been conducting a study on moose for the past 7 or 8 years now. And so we have radio-collared moose and cows, females with calves, and monitoring the productivity of the females and the survivorship of the calves. And we have, lower survivorship. So the calves, the babies, the young of the year, are not living through the year to become an adult. So after they live the first year, we technically call them like an adult. That's because of a winter tick. So it's a tick that's specific to moose, a hope that lives on moose. And that is a climate direct climate issue. So the ticks are surviving more and because of the warmer and drier climate.
And they're basically sucking the life out of these moose.
Yep. It's basically.
I know here along the coast, we've seen a big uptick, and it's just been such a nuisance, you know, people getting Lyme disease and have to be careful, like going out into the wilderness and.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and there's other things that are, so that's a direct thing. You can see like there's the, and we've done necropsies on hundreds and hundreds of animals and have all this documentation. We get really good data. There's other things that lots of other questions we have out there that, you know, as birds, so my background, you know, mostly is with birds. And as birds are migrating and they're returning back to the state, we are seeing that they're coming back a little bit earlier. And so in, but those birds, when they come back, are dependent on a certain suite of insects being available. And so if the timing of when those insects are available, when the trees are budding, when those insects are there eating the you know, leaves, the buds and that sort of thing, if that's off kilter, then those birds aren't getting the protein that they need. And so what are the long-term survivability of those birds, of those particularly those new tropical migrants gonna look like? You know, so there's all kinds of things that we see right now. So climate certainly is one of our biggest challenges, but you know, there's no future in pessimism. And so I really feel like there's a lot of things that we can do to minimize the impacts moving forward. And, you know, I think there's a tremendous opportunity here in Maine. And I think we are so fortunate in that, you know, like what my brother said one day, he was like, my sister's a commissioner in, you know, fish and wildlife in Maine. I mean, where they actually have a lot of wildlife, not like here in Massachusetts.
Right.
So, but not only that, but Mainers really, we're like the third, right? We rank third in the country for people who participate in outdoor activities. That's awesome. So these people are connected, they're committed. The outdoor resources are kind of integral to what makes Maine so special and what people that live in Maine and come to Maine to visit, that's what they want to see. And so, you know, I'm really confident that we're going to be able to maintain, it might not be exactly the way it is right now, but a really healthy fish and wildlife population and outdoor opportunities for people.
And you mentioned some of this already with the things that you're currently working on or things that are on your mind, but what are some of your goals that you may have already achieved already as commissioner, or some goals that you would like to achieve during your time in office?
Yeah. So, you know, some of them are obviously communicating with the broader audience, engaging with the broader audience, getting more people, more diverse group of people, both in the workforce here and in our, you know, the activities that we manage. I think obviously maintaining healthy fish and wildlife populations is a top priority for the agency. And, but, you know, really there's other things like making sure our landowners that most of the state is privately owned. We are very unique. And so we've been working really hard with our landowner relations program to make sure that we have good working relationships with our landowners and that the privilege that we have of being able to access private land, without, you know, fees or leases or anything like that, and making sure that we are able to maintain that is certainly a priority for us. You know, as somebody that came up from within the agency, making sure I'm pretty dedicated, committed to making sure that staff feel appreciated, that they are constantly engaged, and that they have opportunities for professional development. You know, a lot of people come to Fish and Wildlife and they spend their whole careers here. And so I want to make sure that they have opportunities to continue to grow professionally and still are excited to come to work even after they've been here. We've got people who are here for 25, 30, 35 years, and make sure that those people still have opportunities to learn, to grow. So a dedicated and committed professional staff is also one of my top priorities. Else, I think that's probably it.
And one thing I've heard is that there's said to be a gap between recreating Mainers with those who hunt and those who don't hunt. Is that something that actually exists? And if it does, what does that exactly look like?
that is a little bit more of a figment than a reality. I think there's a lot less of a gap than people think there are. And I think that most people here in Maine, and you know, that there's so much overlap between the people that hunt and fish and the people that wildlife watch and in outdoor recreation. Everybody has very similar values. They want healthy wildlife populations. They want a clean environment. They want access to the outdoors. They want good wildlife habitat. Those things support all those activities. And so really there's a lot more common, you know, commonality than there is separation among those groups. And, you know, my background coming from Audubon and as a bird biologist, and obviously I hunt and fish as well. So I really see the similarities and not the differences in those groups. And, you know, we work as an agency, we work with partners on sort of the whole spectrum of activities, of outdoor activities, whether people are snowmobiles or ATV users or hikers or birders or wildlife watchers or hunters or anglers. What, you know, that the agency is here for all of those citizens. And so I really see where those circles overlap more than where they diverge.
And speaking of hunting, numbers have gone down over the past few years. What are some of the reasons behind that? And what are some of the impacts of these decreasing numbers?
Yeah, so that's a really good news story in that our hunting numbers have actually been increasing the past couple of years. And so in 2020, they were up 8%. 21, they've up another 6%. Hunting licenses are up like 18%. I mean, fishing licenses are up. And that's both in-state and resident and non-resident licenses. And so our challenge now is to make sure that those folks that are new to these activities are successful and continue to participate in those activities. And so not just, you know, hunting and angling, but people who ATVing, people who are snowmobiling, people who are boating, there have been just enormous increases in all of those activities. And I think our goal as a state agency is to make sure that people are doing those things responsibly, that they're safe, that, you know, that we're giving them the tools that they need to do those things safely and successfully, and that they have a good time, a good experience, that they want to keep doing it, to make sure that they feel welcomed and supported throughout their, whatever their outdoor process, you know, whatever their outdoor path is, that they feel welcomed and supported. So we've been really fortunate to see a reversal in the trend. We have more people hunting now than the highest since it's been since 1982.
Is that recent uptick a result of COVID, do you think?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a result. I think it's two things. The department had been working actively for a number of years in increasing our communication with people and trying to reduce some of those barriers. And so that when COVID hit, we were really kind of able to implement those things. People were able to participate and they've been hearing from us and they're like, hey, wait, we can do this now. We have, you know, whatever access nearby, or we have a little more time. We can't go to the movies. We can't go to this or that. So let's do these things. And so for sure, COVID has accelerated that. But I think that there was an acceleration from COVID, but it was a lot of prep work that took us to get us to the place where we could actually support that increase and promote it and manage it. So I think it was a combination of things.
Okay, so we're going to step out of the office for a minute, take off the commissioner hat. talk to me about what you enjoy doing in your free time. What are some of your favorite outdoor activities as well?
Yeah, so I think anybody that knows me knows that I like to look at birds. I'm an avid birder, and there's precious few places I go they don't have my binoculars. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I'm outside, I have my binoculars around my shoulder. doesn't matter if we're bird hunting, if I'm, you know, scouting for moose, whatever. I'm constantly looking at birds, and I just like birds. So I do a good deal of birding. I also like to hike. I fish a lot. Most weekends I fish both fly fishing and spin casting. I was just away for a couple of days last week bird hunting. We got a couple bird dogs, a couple German Shorthair pointers. And so I love to hunt with dogs. So I'm obviously a huge animal person. So ability to be outside and like connecting with dogs, watching the dogs do their thing and be outside and hunting is overwhelmingly exciting for me. So I do a good deal of bird hunting. I deer hunt. I've not ever actually harvested a deer, although I've tried.
a little bit more involved in the process.
Yeah. So I hunt. I do a lot of hunting, and I do more fishing. But most every place I go, I'm always birding at the same time. I think for me, hunting and fishing just expands the a bit like the opportunities and things you can do on the weekends or outdoors. And I don't rock climb. There's not many outdoor activities that I don't like to do. That is how I sort of like get my mental health is my outdoor time. So it's kind of mandatory for me. And a few years ago, I started this hashtag opt out every day. So like at least people, I encourage people and for myself included, you need to spend at least a half hour outside every day. Doesn't matter what the weather is, get outside and just like leave your phone behind. I mean, unless you want to take pictures, whatever, but no texting and no social media while you're doing this. And, just connect. And for me, what I love about when I'm not bird hunting, what I love about like deer hunting is just, you just quiet. So there's different ways to interact in the outdoors and they're all restorative and they're all like amazing. And, whether you're walking the dog or going on a hike or going for a bike ride, snowshoeing, you know, skiing, they're all amazing. I'd rather be outside.
And I was reading that you have a special connection to some owls nearby. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I can't believe I didn't say that. Yeah. So it's because I'm in the middle
of owl
migration right now. Yeah. So I'm also a licensed bird bander. And I have, this is my 22nd year of monitoring saw-whet owl migration. So they migrate in the fall right now. And so I do this much. I mean, God, my poor neighbors. So I play a tape that like, oh, it's not a tape, it's an audio file, but years ago it used to be a tape. It blasts through a big speaker and we play the tape of or the audio file of the saw-whet owl breeding call, and that attracts the owls in. It's, you know, a curious thing, but they come in and I've got mist nets set up and
it's like calling them for dinner basically, but
right. It does make for a late night though. It is tiresome.
Yeah. They're just waking up as you're about to go to bed.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit, harder as commissioners to do that, but I still do it as much as I can. And a lot of it's full season weekends, but
do you have names for them?
No, they all get a special band with like security number, 9-digit number. But yeah, no, in a good year, you know, back in the day, I would catch 300 or 400 birds in my backyard. So in the, you know, a 6-week period. So that's pretty amazing. There's some nights when there's 30 or 40 owls in my little tiny backyard, which is so like, that's what's so amazing to me about this is that there's so much we don't know. And here it is 2021. And we still don't know so much about so many things that live right here in our yards. You know, 25 years ago, we didn't even know saw-whet owls migrated.
And what now,
now I've got birds that are coming through Maine or being picked up in Pennsylvania, South Carolina. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it must be fun to watch too, just to see like where they're actually going.
Yes, it's great.
And what are some of your favorite outdoor spots in Maine? Can you give me like a top five if you had to choose?
Oh, yeah, top five. Well, so I'll give you a couple lesser known. One of my favorite places is Brownfield Bog, which is in the Brownfield, Breiberg area. It's a wildlife management area. And I'm sort of partial to it because as a regional biologist, I spent a lot of time there and it's just so beautiful. It's such a beautiful part of the state and there's amazing birds there. It's right in, you can see the White Mountains and Mount Washington right there. And you're not that far from like Portland. It's 40 minutes and you're like, you just feel like you're in the middle of the middle of the wilderness. It's quiet. And I go there, you know, all seasons, you know, winter, spring, summer, it's gorgeous. So I love Brownfield Bog. I really like Scarborough Marsh as well, but that's mostly for shorebirds. So that's probably a little more limited. Certainly I spend a good deal of time on Sebago Lake. And for me, where I live. It's an easy, you know, day trip. So that's kind of nice. Kennebunk Plains is another really great wildlife management area, very different habitat type. So I like to find kind of different habitat, and each different habitat sort of supports different wildlife. So you'll see different plants and animals there. And Kennebunk Plains is a sand plains grassland. So it's got all kinds of rare plants and animals there. So that's another one. I also spend a good deal of time outside of the Greenville area. And just last weekend, I saw my first lynx, and that lynx in our cave. So that's now probably right now, that's probably my favorite place in the world. you know, I also, I mean, I couldn't not mention Baxter, because I mean, that's just such a remarkable resource for the state and such a gorgeous place every time I go. And I'm lucky enough to spend a couple weeks or a couple weekends a year.
Yeah, I think Baxter and Acadia are kind of automatics. And anyway, we talk about the outdoors here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's a amazing spot. So the Moosehead, Greenville area, Baxter. I mean, I also, and I really like getting up into the North Main Woods. And for me, that the whole opportunity to go, you know, go in an area where there's no self coverage, you know, it's just so nice. It's so refreshing and beautiful, and to camp out there and interact with the wildlife. And it's a very different experience than, you know, a lot of the experiences in Southern Maine. So I really like the North Maine Woods as well.
I agree. It's one of my favorite spots as well. Lobster Lake, the West Branch of the Penobscot. Oh, it's gorgeous up there.
Incredible. Yeah, St. John Valley is amazing.
Okay. If your perfect vision of Maine's relationship to the outdoors could come to fruition, what would that look like?
Well, interesting. So, I mean, I honestly don't think we're too far off. You know, my goal would be to have the majority of the Maine residents and the people that come visit the state have a positive interaction with the outdoors, to spend time outside, to interact with wildlife. But, you know, like I mentioned, we're already number three, so we're not doing too badly. And that's what I like about Maine so much, is people are connected to the outdoors. It's not a foreign concept for them to go out and go for a hike, or to go and look at birds. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the divergence between, you know, hunters and the sort of non-hunters. And I don't know a single hunter that does not look at other things while they're out interacting. We're looking at warblers, looking at, you know, small mammal tracks, all kinds of things. Like, people are just curious about the outdoors. And so, you know, I would like to obviously see that continue and to have more people participate. And, you know, there's sort of the need to have, you know, like, for my vision for folks to have passion and be connected, but there's also, it's so physically healthy. It's so good for you to get outside and get that fresh air and, you know, go for a walk. I just think on every level, for wildlife management, for physical health, for mental health, for environmental health, you know, it just is a win. So I would like to continue to see more folks. You know, and the department does a pretty good job. We do, I think, communicating with the public. So I'd like to make sure we continue to do that. And, you know, and working with different partners. So we do a really good job working with some of what the folks that you would expect the department to work with. But I'd like for us to broaden some of those groups and work with some new partners to help get those folks engaged in the outdoors and help them connect with outdoor activities in a way that's safe for them. So I think those will be some areas of growth.
And I'm sure you're fairly busy right now, but have you thought about the future? Any plans for the future at this point?
You mean like from my job?
Your career, or for, you know, personal growth or anything like that?
You know, I would obviously, I'm optimistic Governor Mills will be reelected, and I would certainly very much like to continue on as commissioner. And, you know, really beyond that, I haven't, you know, I'm not sure what I will do after, in 6 years. I'm not sure what I'll do. It will definitely be still, I've never in my life done anything that does not involve fish and wildlife. So it will still be some sort of outdoor, connecting people with nature in some sort of outdoor capacity. So some you know, another organization or group of folks. But I don't foresee that my personal mission isn't going to change regardless of what my position is. So
is there anything else that you would like to add or talk about before we depart?
I can't think of anything. Hopefully I've answered your questions. I guess I would just like to say that, you know, for folks that are listening, if you haven't engaged with the department, take a look at our website or our social media accounts and, you know, feel free to join us. And if you don't hunt or fish, there's lots of citizen science opportunities. There's lots of ways to engage with the department and participate in a whole host of outdoor activities. So check us out and follow us on social media and become part of the outdoors with us. Keeper of the Maine Outdoors.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Commissioner Camuso, for joining us. It's been a pleasure and a lot of great information that you shared with us today. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the weekly podcast. We'll be taking a holiday break, but we'll be back again with new episodes in January. In the meantime, feel free to listen to some of our previous episodes from our first season. You can find the weekly wherever fine podcasts are downloaded or visit one of our news websites. The weekly is a collaboration between the Ellsworth American, Courier Gazette, Republican Journal, Camden Herald, and Mount Desert Islander, all powered by Village Soup. If you have a comment or suggestion for someone we should talk to, send us an email at theweekly@villagesoup.com. Until next time.